Call the meeting of the February 8th Transportation Policy Finance Committee to order. Folks, thank you for your indulgence. We just had a session today, coming back after a little break, and at session, I think Patty Fritz, Representative Fritz, mentioned that she had her 48th anniversary, and as is our custom, she brought cake, and it was very good cake. So I know many of us took advantage of that moment to meet in the back room and do a little fellowship and celebration. So thank you for your indulgence that we're a little late today. It was for a good cause. I'll ask the committee assistant to note the roll and look for a motion to approve the minutes of our last meeting. Is that you, Representative Leidiger?
Yes, it is.
Good, thank you. Members, are there discussion to the motion? Hearing none, let's vote. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. The first House file on the agenda for today's discussion is House File 1915. Representative Runbeck, if you are ready to go, we'll have someone move that bill, and I think that's going to be Representative Vogel. Is that right? Or Benson? And we are going to send this bill where? Well, we're going to lay this one over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. So,
I'd like to move Amendment H1915A1.
All right, hold on there just a second. We have House File 1915 moved and in front of us. And now, Representative Benson, you're moving the A1 amendment. Representative Runbeck, do you need to explain the bill before the A1 amendment, or does the A1 amendment get the bill in the shape you'd like to present?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, thank you. It would get the bill in the shape we'd like it to be in.
Okay, we'll move the A1 amendment then. Questions to that, members? Are we okay moving this to get the bill in position? I sense that we are. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We're supposed to do that, too. Okay, the bill is in the shape that you would like it for presentation. Welcome to the committee, Chair Runbeck.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for the chance to bring this bill before you. House File 1915 does revisit an issue that you took up last year, and that being municipal street aid for cities, four cities actually, who had achieved 5,000 in population but then dipped below that in the recent census. So that was in the policy bill, but as you remember, the clock ran out on that bill. And so that somewhat necessitates a couple of additional issues being addressed. One of those issues is in the bill itself, and that has to do with sort of retroactive 2012 payments based on the policy you approved last year. And then the amendment deals with another issue that cropped up, and that is that MnDOT didn't have clarification in the statute as to what happens when a city falls below 5,000 that has already issued bonds for street aid. So that's really, in a nutshell, what it is. I do have City Administrator Jeff Kynath from Circle Pines here, and also Bond Counsel, if you have questions of Bond Counsel.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Questions for Representative Runbeck before we move to the testifier?
Oh, no.
Mr. Kynath, is it? If you'd identify yourself for the tape and for the folks listening at home, that'd be good, and then proceed.
Yes, I'm Jim Kynath, City Administrator for the City of Circle Pines.
Thank you. Would you like to comment on the amended bill?
Yes. We are in a unique circumstance. We apparently have been the only city that's experienced the issuance of street bonds, which we did in 2008, and then subsequently fell below 5,000 with the latest census. So the position of the state aid program for street municipal street aid is that because we're 5,000, we're no longer eligible to receive bond funds. If you're familiar with the issuance of bonds, there's a commitment at the beginning that that revenue stream would go forward. That's the opinion of our financial advisors as well as bond counsel that those bonds should be paid. But unfortunately, that is not the position of the state. We think the governing statute 162.18 sub 4 is clear, but we would like legislative clarity to make sure that happens. basically a commitment to the life of the bonds, which were sold for 15 years.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Further comments, Representative Runback?
Mr. Chair, I mean, I think that the big issue here is reliance. I mean, when you issue bonds, you are going forward with the understanding there is revenue streams there. And so I think, you know, to the entire municipal bond community, it's an important issue.
Thank you. Members, questions, comments? Representative Morrow, were you seeking to be recognized?
Yes, sir.
On this issue? You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Runbeck. What are the cities that are involved?
Byron and Dayton. And I am not sure if the four.
Actually, if I recall, Representative Morrow, in the policy bill that we're going to discuss in a moment, there's Representative Hortman and Representative Quam had legislation from last year we're going to carry forward that spelled out, I think, four other cities that fell under that for the municipal state aid program. This actually deals with people who have already committed and are bonding from it, so it will kind of be added to that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and if I may follow up, because I think that was the...
Follow up, or should we have Mr. Burris? You want to weigh in on this, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the five cities that are not receiving municipal aid under this program in 2012 are Byron, Circle Pines, Dayton, La Crescent, and Medina.
Thank you. Further questions? Right, Mr. Morrow? Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Runbeck, all five of these cities have already issued the bonds?
Representative Runbeck
Mr.
or Chair Runbeck?
And Representative, no. In fact, it is just Circle Pines that has issued bonds at this point. And I don't know if we handed out that piece. I think we did. 2008 is when they issued their bonds.
And I think there was something in our handout that regarded that, if I'm not mistaken.
A certificate of bonds.
If I may follow up then, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow. Yes.
I wanted to clarify, Mr. Chair, that Circle Pines is in some ways different from the other four cities, and that Circle Pines had already issued bonds or has already issued bonds. The other four cities, my understanding, have not yet issued bonds.
Correct. I believe it would be an accurate statement to say the other cities would like to continue to count it in their budget as they do street improvements and so on. But I think MnDOT was desirous, or some, we were desirous of directing MnDOT to be very clear that if bonds had been issued, that we had to proceed carefully going forward with that.
I do have a couple more just to follow up on this.
Certainly. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Runbeck, I'd like to put Circle Pines aside for a moment because I do understand where there might be a special case for Circle Pines having already issued bonds. What would the four other cities receive in terms of funding if this bill passes? In other words, what would their allocation be? How much money are we talking about?
Representative Runbeck, does that your bill address that at all, or is that in the Quam Hortman legislation?
I believe that was in the original bill. That was
Carly Moline, I think, Representative Moline, actually.
Not last year.
Mr. Burris, can you address that? Because I think that was in, and I don't know if amounts were in there as much as qualifications that they continue to qualify for whatever formula money they were entitled to. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, there are two separate provisions. One continues to provide aid for 4 years, and that's the transitional aid that is both in this bill and was in last year's policy omnibus. And then there's a retroactive payments provision that for the 2013 aid payment would first allocate the money that would have gone for in 2012 to these five cities, so that the city aid is sort of remade to what's lost under the loss of aid because of the population drop. I haven't calculated what the amounts come out to for that.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I won't continue to ask questions, not out of disrespect to Representative Runbeck, but rather to articulate what my concern is. There's at least two. One is, I'm not sure why 4 years. I know I believe, talked about that last year, but I don't recall why 4 years is the magic number. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a response to that. I don't mean to disclude you from the discussion. My other concern, though, Mr. Chair, is I represent a town that went over 1,000 in the census. It went over 1,000 by about 10 people, which made it ineligible for funding under other state programs. So I'm kind of wondering about the philosophy here that we're going to make exceptions for towns who are adversely treated in this program. But I couldn't get anywhere when I tried to, and not in this committee, Mr. Chair, deal with the fact that my town went over by 10 people. and were therefore discluded. So I'm going to ask the majority party at some point to explain to me why this program we should make exceptions under census information, but on other programs that affect city funding, and in fact my town just got 10 people bigger, we're not going to make exceptions. So I'm not asking you to answer that. That is the problem I'm having with this concept. I don't really have a problem with Circle Pines in the sense that it's already committed to bonds. So that, I can see, might be exceptional. And with Mr. Chair, with that, I'll leave it alone. But that's my concern. I'm glad we're laying it over so we could address that a little more.
All right. Thank you for noting your concerns. And when we get there, we'll probably inquire as to what program was changed, because I don't think it was this committee. But we'll hear about that. Further questions for Representative Runbeck or testifier on this bill? Member, thank you for your explanation. The chair is satisfied, and we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill coming up a little later in the session. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, members, at this time, I'm going to take the stand up there and yield the gavel to Vice Chair Murdoch, and we'll take up the next two House files. Before I go there, the plan of attack here is that we will take, House File 1284 will be the vehicle for the omnibus policy bill that we passed last year. There were a couple issues that we ran into some difficulty with, so just to move some provisions in there that need to move, that'll be the first policy bill, hopefully be completely non-controversial. We can move that through the House and the Senate. There will be, the expectation is that there will be a second policy bill a little later here in March, probably. I know the departments, Public Safety and Transportation, both have some housekeeping bills that they'd like to roll into that. More about that at another time. These will be the first ones, though, that we'll bring up today. So if you'll let me do this, get my stuff together, and I'll yield to Vice Chair Murdoch.
Okay, members, before us we have House File 1588, and Chair Beard, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move House File 1588, and we will lay this one over for possible inclusion in an omnibus policy bill. And, Mr. Chairman, in 1588, I think you'll notice, have the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape we'd like to discuss it. I would like to move the 1588 A1 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, members. Chair Beard moves the 1588 A1 amendment. And Chair Beard, would you like to explain the amendment, please?
Yes, in just a moment here I will, sir. The as I recall, House File 1588 was part of a bill last year that we rolled into our transportation policy bill, the omnibus bill that kind of ran out of time at the end of session and ran into some questions, which I thought were valid questions that were raised. And so we're going to pull that from the policy bill and save this for the second policy bill. I believe that's what we're doing. Isn't that correct? Are we going to amend that into 1280-something here in a moment? Okay. I am mistaken in that. But there was some adjustments that when Senator Gimsey and I talked about some of the issues, the MnDOT needs this authority to add a MnPass lane on the 35E reconstruction. That is underway in design and so on, but they, according to state law, I believe, cannot just put MnPass lanes where they want. They actually have to come here for specific statutory authority, legislative approval, to add MnPass lanes, and so on and so forth. There is a problem, in my opinion, with the appropriation of the money from the MnPass lanes in previous quarters, notably 35W and 394. The lanes, the money that was raised in excess of the operating was to be spent in the corridor. I noticed that the bill as it stood last year had the money totaled up, and the money that was in excess of the operations was to be split with the Met Council. The Met Council could spend their portion of the money pretty much wherever they wanted to. I don't want that precedent to be established in this committee while I'm the chairman, so I'm insisting that the money stays with MnDOT and is spent for improvements in the corridor. And that's the gist of the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Chair Beard. Members, any questions, discussion to the A1 amendment?
Mr. Chair, it occurred to me that when I heard 1915 and laid it over, I did forget to ask if there was anyone that wanted to testify for or against the amendment. We'll take that testimony, revisiting that issue, when we revisit that issue, but perhaps there is someone that wants to testify for or against this. I'm not aware, but there could be.
Members, any questions for Chair Beard? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Chairman Beard. Thank you for bringing this forward. I think this hopefully will smooth over some of the issues that the Senate had. But are MnDOT and Met Council, have they come to consensus and also agreed with the language of this?
Chair Beard.
To my knowledge, Met Council has not come to any consensus. Frankly, I didn't ask them. I told them this is what I was going to do.
Okay.
They're welcome to express their opinion to the committee. And pretty much the same with MnDOT.
Okay.
Just I advised them that I thought they should spend it as they had the other money within the corridor itself.
Okay.
And that would be MnDOT Metro's responsibility.
Yeah. Members, any other questions before we go to testifiers? You're good?
Yeah, thanks.
Seeing none, testifiers? Please identify yourself and have at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetton, and I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Just to speak to the amendment, Representative Beard and I did have a conversation about this earlier today, and it is the Council's position that on the 35W corridor and on the 394 corridor that the agreements that we have in place, that in particular in 35W that we had in place in the 30 with the urban partnership agreement, that they stay in place. I mean, the language itself that's being stricken in the amendment in line 1.19, it says that the funds transferred to the council must be for the improvement of bus transit services within the corridor beyond the level of service provided on the date of implementation of subdivision 1. We stand by that. We believe that that agreement should be retained in this bill, and my friends at MnDOT can speak to that as well. As far as the bill moving forward, we did speak with MnDOT, and we understand the agreement moving forward with the I guess MnPass lanes moving forward can move forward differently than what we did on 35W and 394, but I think going back is certainly a problem for the agencies, and I'll let Mr. Thompson speak for MnDOT's perspective.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, and please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nick Thompson from MnDOT. Echoing Judd's comments, we had intent to kind of use the language for the future corridors of MnPass and honor the working agreement to honor the past commitments on 35W and 394. So that was our position. I think we're in agreement with Met Council on that, and I know we can come to a conclusion, but the intent of transit is a very important part of the MnPass system, but also keeping the revenue generated to the investments within the MnPass corridors is an important concept we definitely want to continue to honor.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions for the testifier? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have concerns, similar concerns as what the agencies have outlined, and I guess my question would be for either Mr. Thompson or Mr. Shetland. You know, we have, I think, $133 million of federal money in the UPA agreement, and would changing this language have any impact? Were there any commitments made on those contracts with the FTA and USDA or Transportation Administration nationally? Were there any agreements made that this would affect in any way in
Mr.
terms of getting that funding?
Mr. Thompson?
The agreements made were around the tolling of the facility on 35W, not around the sharing of the revenue. So it would not affect any of these language would not affect those UPA agreements unless we no longer told on 35W, which is not in discussion.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? If not, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, I do have just one question for Mr. Burris, if I may. I just want to understand, Mr. Burris, the A1 amendment does not undo the 394 or 35W agreements. This is only for 35E going forward. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the amendment in combination with the bill does undo the allocations for both 35W and 394. It changes the 394 allocation that was originally put into place when the authority was created for MNPAS in the first place to be, you know, the single allocation for all corridors. And it's not the amendment, it's the original bill that has a repealer that removes the 35W allocation provision.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Burris. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion in a bill. Perhaps I can take that matter up at another time. I'm not certain that the intent of the chair was to undo the existing agreements, but the 35E agreement going forward was the intent of my discussion, but perhaps another testifier wants to speak to it.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Robert Tedeson. I'm attorney in Minneapolis, and I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance, which is a joint powers board that's existed for about 20 years. It includes the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, and Burnsville, Lakeville, and a few others, plus the counties of Hennepin, Scott, and Dakota. Our concern would be that if it takes money out of the 35W corridor and a part of that urban partnership agreement, we would be concerned about that because that's still not fully implemented. We need monies to complete the high-speed bus service on that. It includes some physical change that need to be done. It's going to be very expensive, but right now we can't have the bus rapid transit on that route because we don't have the facilities. And part of the urban partnership agreement is to get that done, and we were a prime supporter of that. So I want to make sure that doesn't detract from our ability to move forward with the bus rapid transit in the 35 corridor. That includes the 35 and also Cedar Avenue. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tennyson. Chair Beard, any response there?
No, not really, Mr. Chairman. I would just urge adoption of the A1 amendment, and then we'll lay the bill aside, and we'll take this up again here in the near future.
Okay, members, with that, we'll take a vote on the A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, unless there's further questions or people testify for or against the bill as amended, I'd ask that we lay the bill over for possible inclusion.
Any other testifiers for or against? If not, we will lay the bill over.
Well, thank you, members. And Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to move to House Bill 1284, and we can start building the omnibus policy bill, if we may.
Okay, and 1284, if you'd like to move that, or if you just did.
Yes, I'd like to actually move 1284 and recommend it pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. That's where it needs to go next.
Oh, great. Oh, good to get to see it again.
I get to see it.
Mr. Chairman,
okay, Chair Beard,
just a member to look through a moment to look through this pile of.
And members, I might just say again what Chair Beard did. The bulk of this bill is our items that we have discussed and debated in the past year. So if we could keep our questions and comments to anything new, that would speed this process up. So I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and members, House Bill 1284 is a bill that the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers brought to us last year. It's one of those bipartisan common sense bills that specifically spells out that who is exempt from showing a driver's license to the police, and it adds specifically railroad operators, that would be most of the locomotive engineers and conductors, when they're in the operation of their duties and on railroad property. They are federally licensed, and it is possible, I suppose, for them to have a federal license and not have a driver's license. Nonetheless, the driver's license has absolutely nothing to do with the conduct or operation of their train or the operation commit their duties as railroad employees, and so there is general agreement that this is a good thing to do. That is House Bill 1284. But Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to amend House Bill 1284, unless there's questions to the basic bill.
Yes, members, questions to the basic bill?
Good, thank you. I'd like to move the 559 amendment. And here it is.
Okay, Chair Beard moves the A12 559 amendment. And Chair Beard, to your amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Mr. Burris, can I call on you to briefly explain the 559 committee? If I remember right, this is pretty much the heart and soul of some of the bills we heard last year that were largely non-controversial that were included in the original bill. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, that is correct. There are some changes and some elimination of provisions, but this is essentially last year's policy omnibus, and I can walk through that at whatever level of detail you'd like, if you want.
About 10,000 foot level, if you would, perhaps working off of the overview would be sufficient, Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, there are several provisions that are from bills heard last year. Representative Murray has had a bill last year that's in here that's on electric-assisted bicycles, defaulting, allowing e-bikes on trails and bikeways unless specifically prohibited. There's some MnDOT agency provisions in housekeeping that include a new Mississippi River Trail, some changes to driving rules and right-of-way and signage, removing some obsolete references. There is a new memorial bridge and a new memorial highway. There's a provision on changing what the levy eliminating actually the levy requirements for town roads to receive a town road account aid. There's a provision we discussed earlier on the population cutoff for municipal state aid, extending a transition period of 4 years. There's a provision on tax exempt registration of conservation vehicles that would be allowed to be unmarked under the bill. There's an additional change to a provision that was enacted last year on anatomical gift donation to allow for donations at the time of payment of vehicle registration tax. There's also a change on how public impound lots are classified, narrowing which lots are considered public. There's a provision on road authorities and overweight vehicle exemptions for vehicles that are clearing snow and ice and handling slippery conditions. The driver's license exemption provisions were already discussed. They're included in here. There is a elimination of a requirement to signal when turning in a roundabout. There's expanded authority for buses to use shoulders so that any kind of road authority can establish that authority. There's a provision on allowing certain collector emergency vehicles that have non-conforming lights to be operated under some circumstances. There's an agency provision that eliminates or narrows the child restraint requirement so that some lighter buses would not be exempt from child restraint requirements. There's some MnDOT agency provisions on commercial driver's license, a waiver, as well as overweight vehicle permitting changes. There's an elimination of when a speeding violation is recorded on a driver's record. There's a provision for online driver's education, establishing that. There's another agency MnDOT provision on alternative financing to allow for a pilot project that uses alternative financing. There's some reporting changes to MnDOT's trunk highway reporting, centralizing and expanding information that's required. There's another agency provision from MnDOT originally on rail bank property that changes the prohibitions on that property and raises the penalty. There's a provision specific to the Painesville Airport on debt forgiveness and how payments are managed back to MnDOT. There's a variance required of a seaplane base and some repealers that go along with some of the other changes that I just briefly touched on. Mr. Chair, that's pretty much a nutshell.
Mr. Chairman and members, that is the There's the essence of the bill. There's some bits of provisions from last year that we felt we needed to leave out at this time in order to make this bill flow right through the system so we could get it to the floor and get it passed into the Senate. Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to stand for questions to this part if necessary.
Okay,
yes. Few more amendments as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have questions. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question, I think, is for Mr. Burris. And Mr. Burris, I'm looking at the omnibus cross-reference list here. It's item number, or section 12. It's the anatomical gift donation edition. Mm-hmm. And what our sheet indicates is that it was enacted in 2011. So I'm trying to understand that we removed other ones that were enacted in 2011. What's different about this provision?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair and members, the original provision did not include a mechanism for making a donation to the new account when you're paying the vehicle registration tax. So the original bill was enacted last year, as this notes, but the delete all amendment includes a provision that covers registration tax payment in addition to when you pay your tabs.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, is this a provision that we've talked about in committee, or is this the first time, the new provision that Mr. Burris just described?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Chair. Moore, I believe this is actually new. The intent of the bill last year is kept intact by this, but the Department of Public Safety, I believe, came to us and said, if this is what you were intending, you left this out, this fills that hole. So it should be pretty non-controversial.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I just want to then confirm. I don't have an outstanding problem with adding that provision.
Sure.
Is there anything else in this amendment, this delete everything amendment, that is new that we have not heard in this committee?
Chair Beard.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm looking at Mr. Burris, I don't believe so. When we're done with the amendments, I will read you the list of things we left out that we'd agreed to last time. But as far as I know, this is the only technical adjustment. And again, it was conforming and in the spirit of the rule, so we should be good.
Okay, members, any further questions on the amendment? Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and you did a great job last year, and I appreciated your House File 587, and I know that it's not in the bill. You know, it should be in the bill, and I know you've tried, Representative Beard, but it's a common sense thing, studying the Dan Patch corridor and lifting that gag order. I appreciate your efforts, Mr. Chair, and I'm disappointed it's not in the bill. I understand why. I'm not going to try to amend it back on.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to say, on the record that's good policy, and I wish it were in the bill.
Chair Beard?
Speaking as a skeptic of trains, thank you for the comments. I agree. It is poor government policy, but it is time. I should probably visit again. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, I gather from some conversation in the community that there is perhaps some misunderstanding about current law, though. We're not supposed to spend money to study, but no one can do a gag order of conversation. And so it is perfectly acceptable for a local community or a county or anyone to talk about this. Mm-hmm. That obviously we can't prohibit that. Some people actually think that local entities couldn't even debate the issue, but I think it has more to do with expending consulting fees or something.
Chair Beard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I thank you for the clarification. It is more fun and politically rewarding to call it a gag order, but technically people can speak about it, and the gag police don't come and get you for saying the words Dan Patch in a public meeting. So, yes, thank you for clarifying that.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, just to push it a little bit further, in other words, were a local entity to reconsider this, they could have the discussion about it and bring something to us asking for funding or whatever. I think there has been a little bit of misunderstanding.
Thank you, Chair Beard.
Good.
Members, any further questions on the amendment? Do we have any testifiers for or against this amendment to enlighten us? Seeing none, then we will vote on the, forgot the number, 559 amendment. I haven't done this for a while. 559 amendment. Members, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, members. Mr. Chairman, I also would like to offer the 1284A5 amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, this alters some of the language that we'd spoken about last year about the having MnDOT Aeronautics issue a variance for a public seaplane base at Elbow Lake. Elbow Lake is also known as, can somebody say that, Fleckfjord Lake? It's known in the airport manual as Elbow Lake. But anyhow, this says that they shall establish conditions and limitations and so on put that in so that they can put it in the public database that it is a recognized seaplane base. And that's the gist of this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, questions, comments on the A5 amendment? Anybody here to testify for or against? Seeing none, members all in favor of the A5, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the A5 is adopted.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer the 1284A4 amendments. And Mr. Nisley can remind me whose amendment this is, where that came from.
We'll find out.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it's been pointed out Representative Murray actually carried this as a compromise between several entities who had an interest in this issue. Perhaps we could ask Mr. Murray to explain it if he wishes, if he recalls doing that good work. Or perhaps there's somebody in the audience to speak to it. Oh, good. Here's our chance at Mr. Knuth.
Okay. Mr. Knuth, nice to see you here. Please identify yourself and speak to the A4, please.
My name is Dan Knuth. I represent the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, and we work closely with the League of Cities to put this amendment together, and I'll have Ms. Finn introduce herself.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and this amendment really reflects the work of our policy committees over the summer in looking at the legislation that was coming forward on electric-assisted bicycles. Our city officials expressed some interest in preserving some local control over their trails, and they wanted to make sure there was some comfort language in here that would allow, particularly with existing easement agreements, those to stay in place, and then also that the city would have and the county the authority to prohibit electric-assisted bicycles for safety reasons on their local trails.
Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to go through the amendment in more detail, I'd be glad to do that.
Chair Beard, do we need to go through it further, or Representative Murray?
Perhaps unless there's specific questions, I think it's sufficient. We understand there's peace in the valley on it. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I might... we did talk about restriction of uses of electric-assisted bicycles for safety, general welfare, and then terms of property conveyance. In other words, where there was an easement or a sale of property, then that the commissioner in terms of state trails, and then also local entities could use that in order to restrict certain areas of the trail. So, and then the other one, there was an amendment on the Mississippi River Trail that allows MnDOT to get into or to have contracts with local entities and a host of other governments. But we thought it may be important to have private entities have some sort of contracts, a bicycle club, a hunting club, somebody that wanted to keep a trail open and keep it maintained in some way. This is just purely an option. A concern that the League of Minnesota Cities had was that Under the definition of electric-assisted bikes, we could use a two-wheeler or a three-wheeler. The concern was that a three-wheeler would be too wide on the trail, and so we've removed three-wheelers as being defined as an electric-assisted bike. That's the essence of the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Knuth, and Ms. Finn, thank you very much. Members, any questions for the testifiers? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Greg. Mr. Chair, I'll renew my motion to adopt the A5 amendment, I believe it was, correct? A4
amendment. A4 amendment. With that, Chair Beard renews his motion to pass A4. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
I believe Representative Champion has the A3 amendment.
Representative Champion.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the H1284A3 amendment.
Okay, members, Representative Champion moves the A3 amendment. So I'm going to Representative Champion to your amendment.
Thank you so very much. Mr. Chair, this particular amendment just really reflects the original House Files 1345, which is the targeted group businesses provision and program, and also Representative Gauthier's House File 1434 for working capital loans, and this is for targeted group businesses as well as veteran-owned businesses. So it's to make sure that there's the opportunity to have this initiative or program back in place so that we can improve the quality of lives for those who are involved. And last and certainly not least, the working capital loan fund is just reestablished and also creates access to capital for those small businesses. And so I would appreciate the chair accepting this amendment, and I would like to renew my motion to pass this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Champion. Chair Beard, to the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Champion, thank you for bringing the amendment forward. We had originally left it out of the delete all amendment in courtesy to the Senate because they had not heard the bill yet, and that was one of the sticking points we had last year with trying to move the whole thing, was we were just a couple steps ahead of them. They are hearing the bill tomorrow in committee, and so the Senate chair has asked that we include it in this bill, and we'll just keep moving ahead. So once they've heard it and are good with things, then they can adopt it in a conference committee if there needs to be one, if that's what they choose to do. So please support the Champion Amendment. Thank you.
Members, any questions of the amendment? With that, Representative Champion renews his motion to pass the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the A3 is adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to move the A6 amendment. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Mr. Burris, we just had a brief discussion a moment ago with Representative Morrow about the anatomical gifts, and how would it, Mr. Burris, if I may ask, how does this differ, and what are we doing with the A6 that wasn't already done in the original delete all amendment? Or perhaps the public safety is here to explain why they felt they needed this. Maybe that's the better way to do this, Mr. Chair, if I can call one of our regular and expert witnesses to testify.
We will hear from the witness. Good afternoon. I think we all know you, but would you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. And we appreciate the consideration of this amendment. When we had been having discussions, but on how this would work in terms of the registration renewal process, and as you know, we have three types of transactions that can take place. They can be the online tab renewal, deputy registrar customer service delivery option, or mail registration. But because sometimes you need to get plates renewed and you need to get a plate distributed as well, the language was difficult for us to work with in terms of the tab renewal fee or the online tab renewal or the mail registration process. And so we believe the best way to do it would be the way that we do it with driver's licenses, and that's with the face-to-face customer service transactions. And so the only time that the $2 checkoff donation would be available is if you are renewing your tabs and you're doing it at a deputy registrar's office. The deputies were fine with that. Oftentimes, we found in working with the driver's license transactions that customers have questions about organ donation, and it's also helpful to have someone there that can answer and respond to those questions. So this language just allows for the only time the $2 donation would be used would be when you're doing a face-to-face transaction at a deputy registrar office. LifeSource was fine with that option and thought that was probably the best route to go because of the fact that there can be discussions about the organ donation process, and so this is why we're offering this language.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Members, any questions? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, or Representative Beard, I'm sorry. I'm looking at line 1.8 of the amendment. And I'm just trying to understand, add the tax, comma, a $2 donation. And I'm wondering why the word tax needs to be in there if it's a donation.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure. I'm trying to understand how the sentence flows here. Just a moment. Mr. Burris, should that be to add to the tax? I think there's a word missing because up on line 1.7, it refers to that this actually is added to the vehicle registration tax. I think we're missing a word that helps that flow.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I would agree that the word two is probably missing there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, perhaps I'll offer an author's amendment to add the word on line 1.8 to add between the words add and the to the tax, and just incorporate that into the amendment. Or Representative Morrow,
Mr. Chair, would you also strike the comma after tax then? Add to the tax.
Would it be correct to do that as well? Mr. Chairman, perhaps the committee should ask for an editor next year as part of our budget. I'm just messing with you, Representative Morrow. But Mr. Burris perhaps wants to comment to that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burris, comments?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's the committee's decision on whether it wants a comma there or not.
We'll incorporate.
Great. So if it's okay with the committee, we'll just incorporate these changes into the amendment.
Fine with me.
Representative Morrow?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Beard, I just want to know, generally for this bill, as we're putting it together, now that we have the $2 donation, I don't know that this would trigger a fiscal note, but will we be receiving a fiscal note on the bill that will be moving forward?
Chair Beard?
Boy, that was a wicket that I hadn't even anticipated because this money basically doesn't flow to the state, if I recall. It is donated. Ms. McCormick, perhaps you could help me here. This money actually flows to another organization for organ donation purposes. So there's actually no general fund or trunk highway fund impact. But
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the issue would be that the only issue would be the grant administration, which is in the other bill that was already enacted into law, and that's to allow for some money from the donations collected to be given to the Office of Justice Programs, who does grant administration within our department, and to handle the whole grant process for LifeSource. That was in the other, that part of the
passed last year
in the language that was in last year's bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Morrow.
And I think I see a fiscal note walking out the door here as well. Representative Beard, my question is a more generalized one. We're putting together a bill which mostly has been already heard. I'm just wondering, is there a fiscal note for the entire bill as it will move forward? And if not, I just want to hear it said that we don't have a fiscal note for 1284 as amended.
Members, Mr. Nisley just informed me we have a preliminary fiscal note. It's going to be copied and distributed. So,
we do have that coming. Good. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
that'll be here shortly. Members, any other questions?
We have the A6 amendment in front of us then, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yes, we have the A6 amendment with no further questions. Oh, Chair okay. Beard moves the adoption of A6. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note specialist just whispered in my ear that it actually just was completed as committee started, so they are copying it. It'll be here shortly.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So we can see what that number is. Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I have one more motion. I'd like to, I don't know, do I have to move to take off the table, House File 1915, since I just laid it on the table? For possible inclusion, or just move House File 1915 as an amendment. Members, that is the bill we just heard from Representative Runbeck regarding the directing MnDOT to keep cities and towns whole as they're making their bond payments. So I'll move that that 1915 be included in this bill as well.
Chair Beard moves that to incorporate House File 1915 as amended into House File 1284. And discussion. Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, Chair Beard. I'm going to have a little concern with that, as you might imagine. I asked some questions about the amount of money that's involved. I asked about the difference between the four cities and the one city that's already issued bonds. I'm trying to work with you on this bill, as I think the whole committee is.
Sure.
Those questions are really within the province of this committee. What's happening to the mutual state aid yes. money, and how does that change, and what kind of precedent we're setting. So I'd be uncomfortable adding it to this bill and then having this bill leave this committee, which doesn't mean my questions couldn't be answered and it could be amended even on the floor. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have a problem voting in favor of this, given that there are questions that we were not able to answer within this committee, within the purview of this committee.
Chair Beard.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to recall the conversation when I was trying to come up to speed and paper was flying around. We were having this discussion. Members, to be clear, I believe the four cities that are in the bill already are cities that were getting municipal state aid and counting on it in their budgets but had not actually borrowed against those payments. I believe the city that was in question in House File 1915 was the only one in the state that actually had, in a previous iteration, been authorized to bond and use those payments to pay those bonds. And now, because they fell below the 5,000 threshold, I believe, they actually are having, MnDOT is saying it's not clear. They want to take the payments away, which, of course, strings their budget, screws it all up. So it's the only city in the state that I believe is that way. However, Mr. Chairman, if there's going to be an issue, we want this policy bill to be as clean and non-controversial as possible, because there are things in here that do need to pass. I believe we can hold 1915 further until the next policy bill or a separate bill like that. I was just hoping that we could probably see our way clear to collegially help, was it Circle Pines? And I don't have that paperwork in front of me here. Help them out and give MnDOT the direction they needed to stop scaring their finance director to death.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Beard. I too want to see the bill go forward, and if it's just the Circle Pines issue that we're dealing with, I will remove my objection, but I do want to get answers to those questions that I asked earlier.
Sure.
And so with that, I would invite the committee to vote on your motion to include 1915.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps we could ask Mr. Burris just to correct my comments or edit them if that was necessary, but I believe Circle Pines is the only one we know of that's in this predicament, if I'm not mistaken, which is why the bill was bought specifically for that city. Is that correct, Mr. Burris?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, yes, Circle Pines is the only city of the cities losing now losing municipal state aid that had bonded against that revenue stream. There are a number of other cities in the municipal state aid system that have previously bonded against that revenue stream, but they're continuing to receive aid because their population is still above 5,000. The language of the bill is written for any city whose population drops and had date of enactment of the bill bonded against the revenue stream, they would continue to receive municipal state aid payments to cover that debt service.
Mr. Chairman, so then to be clear, at the moment, Circle Pines was the catalyst that triggered House File 1915, but the way it's written, it will cover any city going forward that should fall into that category, and that's the policy that 1915 would set, correct?
Mr. Chair, Burst. Representative Beard. Yes, that's correct, but I would note that it'll cover every city going forward that had bonded prior to the effective date of the provision. Okay. So it's not indefinitely. If a city bonds in the future against municipal aid and its population drops off, it would then be on the hook under, how MnDOT has administered this provision.
Well, thank you for the clarification, Mr. Chair. Perhaps that should be a cautionary tale for cities that are on the bubble going forward. But at this moment, it looks like ones that have already bonded and are counting on this would be covered by this bill, but not new ones that engage in bonding, counting on municipal state aid. Members, I'm pretty clear with that, and I'm okay with that. But if it's going to give somebody heartburn, we could probably, are we okay? So with that, I'll let my motion stand, and hot off the press, Mr. Chairman, here's a fiscal note for us to consider.
So with that, Chair Beard renews his motion to incorporate House File 1915 as amended into 1258. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And the motion is adopted. Yep. Chair Beard, do you wish to move on and incorporate House File 1588 as amended into House File 1285?
Excuse
me, 84.
Chair, I'm kind of getting a glance at this fiscal note here.
Oh.
13.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Cost and saving. I don't think there's anything untoward there, but there it is. Mr. Chairman, we just did 1588. We laid that on table for possible inclusion. That as amended.
Correct.
And that's where we're at. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, trying to recall where the discussion ended on 1588. I know that we had a couple of agencies spoke against the bill, but I'm inclined to move ahead with it as it is, but perhaps we should move it, have some discussion, and see where the committee's at on it. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 1588 as amended to be included in 1284.
Thank you, Chair Beard. Questions? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll support your motion too. I understand that you had said as the agencies were testifying that, and I just want clarification on this, that it wasn't your intention necessarily to have 35 and 394, that your intention was to just have 35E, and that you had made kind of reference to working with them and getting that language out, et cetera, and I'm fine with that. I thought
Thank you.
Was really helpful, Mr. Chair, of you to suggest that.
Chair Beard.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. It's coming back to me now as I'm only carrying about two tracks today. I'm not doing well on three or four.
Yeah.
The bill is to move from this committee to local government. I'd like to research that repealer at the end that seems to be giving us heartburn that might have overreached what I was looking for. And I will work with you on that. You're on local government with me,
you
and Representative Nelson.
As are you.
When we get there, we'll make sure that that's either I've built a defensible case to keep it in there, or I will take it out. And that's my word to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Beard. Members, questions to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of incorporating House File 1588 as amended into House File 1284. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And the motion prevails.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to renew my motion that 1284, as amended several times, recommended to pass, re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections.
Okay. Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1284, as amended many times, be recommended to pass and re-referred to GovOps. And comments, Representative Hornstein.
Quickly, thank you. Representative Beard, for bringing this forward, and I know how difficult this bill can be. And there always seems to be something that delays it, and we have to do it the next year and do two bills. So you've just done a great job, and it's not easy. But just before we vote on this, Mr. Chairman, I apologize because I probably should have asked for this earlier, but I didn't want to let Section 26 go without at least a quick comment, and maybe we could have someone from one of the departments on record testify on this. This is the Representative Erdahl's provision, the so-called Dimler or Dimdahl bill on insurance companies and speed limits. And, you know, I'm in the minority. I recognize that, and maybe even in my own caucus a minority. But I just wanted to say that I think this is just not good public safety policy. I know that speeding is one of the leading causes of death on our highways, and I think any kind of loophole or any kind of inference that it's okay to go over the speed limit is problematic. And I don't know if there's anyone from either the Department of Transportation or Department of Public Safety that wants to make a very quick comment on the record before we vote on this, because I think this is a major, major change. It's problematic, and I just want to make sure we have a record of this discussion.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I see we have a couple of testifiers here, so would you please identify yourself and tell us what's on your mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity today. My name is Sue Groth, and I'm the state traffic engineer for the Minnesota DOT. And I just want to briefly comment on Section 2026 and state that we are in opposition to amending what we're called the Dimler and providing it to essentially say that it's okay to drive 70 miles an hour over the speed limit in 60 mile per hour zones. We just feel that that sends the wrong message about our traffic safety laws. We have a strong traffic safety program in conjunction with the Department of Public Safety, and that's why I asked Major Urquhart to speak on my behalf also. We're going in the right direction. Our fatalities are falling. If you look at this little card that we're handing out, it talks a little bit about towards zero death in our program, and it shows that fatalities have been decreasing. I feel very strongly that this amendment will, or this section will, cause speeds to go up on those 60 mile per hour roads, and we know that our two-lane, two-way roads are our most unsafe roads in the state of Minnesota. So I guess with that, I just would like Major Urquhart to maybe comment on kind of the effects of the law and what this means to him.
Thank you, ma'am. Major, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Urquhart. I'm a major with the State Patrol. Just a couple items real quick here. As part of that Towards Zero Death initiative that we have many partners involved with, and we made such significant progress there in reducing crashes throughout Minnesota from 1 year to the next, one of the major elements of that success is voluntary compliance by the drivers that travel in Minnesota with our traffic laws. And one of our other concerns is that the issue of repeat offenders. We've seen this existing law used time and time again by drivers who continue to offend and then never see, you know, these violations on their driving record. And we do have a concern about that. And of course, we feel that this is a message that's sent to the motoring public that may affect voluntary compliance, and we don't want to see that commitment by the drivers erode based on this legislation.
Thank you, Major. Members, any questions for the testifiers? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your consideration of the bill. We'll point out that the so-called Dimdahl Amendment did pass with, like, 110 votes on the floor of the House, and will probably be a similar number in the Senate. The chair would be interested in discussing this, I suppose, when we find it in our hearts someday to actually lower the price of a speeding ticket when it's upwards of $135 now. And I know that was done on our watch when we came in with a $4 billion deficit. I'm just concerned that we are making things even more difficult for people who are struggling to make ends meet. And so I just thank you for your comments. Yes, I don't take this lightly, but this is one that I care about in the bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, unless there's any other remarks, I would move to my original motion to refer it to government operations as amended.
Thank you, Chair Beard. And with that motion, that House File 1284 as amended be recommended pass and go to the Committee on Government Ops and Elections. That's a mouthful to say. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? And the bill is on to GovOps.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair Beard.
Members, thank you for your attention to that matter. We're going to move on with the agenda, which is a continuation of DPS's discussion. We're going to lead into a discussion about the Minlar system. So if you would prepare yourselves to hear the discussion. And ask good questions, that would be great. Ms. McCormick, Ms. Ellingson, welcome back to the committee. Where am I? Before you start, I just want to ask staff a question. November forecast. We get through this yet? Members, in your packet, there's a November forecast, fund forecast. We'll receive that report at a later date. If you put that in your save file, that'd be just great. And we're looking for the Minlar status report packet that looks like this. Okay, now that the chair is back with the program, Ms. McCormick, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. My recollection is that we had completed the slides and we were at the part where we were just going to begin asking questions. And I know that we have received two advanced questions from committee members, and so I wasn't sure if that's where you would like us to start.
Members, before I ask Ms. McCormick to read those questions and address the ones that have been provided in advance. Does anybody else have a burning issue they need to jump in the head of the line? Seeing none, bless you. Mr. McCormick, if you'd inform us of the questions and speak to them, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first question was from Representative Morrow, and Representative Morrow is requesting information regarding web transactions, specifically whether DVS has plans to increase the number of website transactions as a percentage of total transactions. And then he asked three specific questions. How does the percentage of web transactions compare nationally? Does DVS have ideas on how to increase the percentage of web transactions? And does DVS conduct web usability studies on its sites? Unfortunately,
I have. Is that one question, or was that? I'm sorry, Ms. McCormick. Go ahead.
That's okay. Thank you. Unfortunately, I had a handout for the committee, and I forgot to bring it, and someone brought it up here, but they gave it to some individual, and I don't know who has it, and so we'll make other copies and get them to all the committee members. But basically, what the information stated was, for one thing, in terms of the number that we used in our presentation that you have in front of you, we didn't have the most up-to-date number for the transactions listed. And the specific transactions that were listed only related to our TAB online renewal transactions. The number is increased for 2011, the registration renewals number is 393,960, and all of the information I'm talking about will be on this handout that you'll receive.
Ms. McCormick, is that trending up or down, or will that information also be on the handout?
Mr. Chair, that information is, well, it is increased from the number we had on that on the handout you have currently. I can tell you, though, before I get into the rest of these, just to give you some history, the online tab renewal transactions has never been a large number for DVS because most of our customers see their deputy registrar offices. They very much support, I think, working within their community, as well as they want the tabs right away to get on their vehicles. And so the majority of transactions are performed at the deputy registrar offices. We do offer mail registration as well, and about 22% send in their tab renewal payments, and then we send out the stickers to them. And at times we have to send plates, obviously, as well. So in general, obviously, with MNLARS, we would want to increase our options for our customers. The important thing for us is that we would be able to do as much of the transaction as possible at whatever the point of service is. And so that's what we've been trying to do in terms of what we've done up to now, but we have not been able to add much in terms of web transactions or online transactions because of the fragility of our current system. But we do have other transactions that are done on the web that we have put in this handout you'll get. So I'd like to just go through that because there are things that our customers can do on the web right now. They can check the status of their driver's license to make sure they have valid driving privileges. Over 2 million status checks are done on driving privileges on a yearly basis. They can do a vehicle sale affidavit so that it informs us that it's been a private sale of a vehicle, and we have 51,968 this past year. They can do a vehicle held for resale report. 296 are done online. A vehicle junk report, over 11,000 are done online. Vehicles reported removed from the state, 12,000. Vehicle change of address, 48,970. And of course, you can schedule your road test online, and we have 47,328 road tests scheduled online this past year. So there are things that we do right now that are done on our website. We have a survey that was done in 2009 by AMVA, the American Motor Vehicle Administrators Association, that talks about web transactions, and we have a copy of some trends that you can see about vehicle registration that's on this handout I'll get to you. But we have also requested that AMVA do an updated survey with all the states, so that we would hope that within about a month we would have that survey, the survey results for you, and we would hope that within about a month we would have that survey, the survey results for you, and we will share them with you at that time so that you can see where we are in terms of what other states are doing. Right now, in terms of states accepting online transactions, just as a summary from the survey we have in 2009, 6 states do titles online, driver license, 12 states do driver license transactions online, plates, 10 states do that, prorate transactions, 6 states do that, and online records are done by 10 states. So there's not a majority of states that are, that's the direction they're going. And part of that is because, as we've mentioned on previous times when we've talked about MNLARS, is that motor vehicle agency systems take a great deal of effort to be able to redesign and build new systems. And there are some states that are either working on that now or like we are. There are other states that may be just starting to implement it. And there's a lot of other states that are just starting to work on putting together an RFP. They're costly systems, and it's also a major effort, as you know, in terms of the amount of dollars that need to be expended to build a new system.
Yes, Ms. McCormick, I've been tracking this. We've been tracking this for, oh, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I suppose, anyhow, since we've been talking about doing this. Of the 50 states in the union, there's only a handful that actually have an integrated licensing and registration system. Is that what I'm understanding?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to state that. What I'm saying is that there's not a lot of states that are already accepting online transactions.
Oh, okay, okay. This is the online web-based portion, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, perhaps more about the comprehensiveness of the system and where we're at in a moment, but continue. You were dealing with, I think, Representative Morrow's written question there.
Well, I think that was the response.
Okay.
Then he talked about what we have ideas to increase the percentage of web transactions. I think our goal is to, as I said before, try to have the services take place at the point of service as often as possible, whether it be by web or by face-to-face customer transactions. But of course, we also have to be careful because of the types of transactions we do. Oftentimes we have to be able to verify the identity of the person, and so that's number one in terms of preventing fraud and making sure that the person is who they say they are. So those things would have to be taken into account in any type of online transaction that might occur. So at this point in time, what we're looking at is trying to ensure the security of our system and the security of the data. And we're not at the point until we come out with an approved project and we have a contract in hand where we can talk about a timeline and some of the changes that may be made with the MNLARS system.
Mm-hmm.
I think the third question that Representative Morrow asked is, does DVS conduct web usability studies on its site? And in general, we do not do that. So,
web usability studies. Well, that was I can ask Representative Morrow what he meant about that, rather than have you try to define that. Okay.
Okay.
Did you have another written question there, or was that...
We have another question from Representative Nelson. What effect, if any, is the OET consolidation having on the MNLARS update?
Excellent question. I remember Representative Nelson and I chatting about this in the lunchroom the other day. Thank you. I'm dying to hear your answer.
I think Commissioner Ellison is going to respond to this question.
Okay. Commissioner Ellison, welcome to the
committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner with the Department of Public Safety. As you know, the legislature passed a statute last year mandating consolidation of all IT services under the state mm-hmm. chief information officer, and they're in the process of implementing that legislation. But OET has actually been involved in this project in one way, shape, form, or another since its inception, and so they had to approve the RFP. And we most recently had an update meeting with Commissioner Parnell to go over the plans to date and bring her up to speed on where we are. And so we have regular check-ins with their staff, as we had since the beginning, but now their oversight, of course, has stepped up because ultimately she's right with us in terms of making sure that this project goes successfully.
Good deal. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. That's good to hear, because sitting on the Sunset Commission this fall, some of the things that we heard and some of the complaints from some of the departments that we oversaw this year was complaints about not meshing well with the OET update, and so it's good to hear that you're working hand-in-hand with them and it's not causing problems.
Yeah, I've heard some of the engineering software applications in MnDOT and some other places, too, were having some of the same issues. We'll circle back on those at another time. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do always worry when we impose what we think is a good idea, particularly when it's consolidation. And I've always been nervous about the IT piece because hopefully that's a tool that should come right out of the mission of the agency. And missions are vastly different from agency to agency. And so I always worry about unintended consequences and whether people sit around the table then and wonder how in the heck will we make a centralized system work for this agency and also for this one, and that we end up having it cost more because you have to make the system fit for so many reasons.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, with this process in particular, this is a redesign, and so by former statutes, OET had to have involvement with it. So they've really been involved with this from the beginning in one way, shape, form, or another. So this is a little bit of a different process than consolidating all the existing IT services within the under the auspices of OET, but for whatever that's worth, that has been a positive, that it's been a newer project.
Thank you, and thank you for the good comment, Representative Hausman. Ladies, you proceed, or are you ready for other questions?
Mr. Chair, we're glad to respond to any other questions that you might have.
I've got just a couple here. Members, any other discussion? We have about 7 or 8 minutes left here, and we'll be adjourning for the day. But, you know, as I'm thinking about this system and trying to think of how it functions and with how many different people it interconnects, of course, obviously, if I'm understanding it correctly, this system will be something that the police departments around the state can access when they're doing their little scanner thing, and they can tell driver's license updates, status checks, things like that, correct? So we got law enforcement involved in it, and they benefit from this MnLARS upgrade as well?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, law enforcement has, we provide data that goes to the system that law enforcement accesses.
Okay.
And so it contains our data, all the vehicle record information and the driver information that you'd have on your driver's license, as well as any convictions and any restrictions. In other words, if you were only able to drive during the day, that kind of a restriction would be available for law enforcement. So they have that, and then they have the entire vehicle record so that they can tell if it's registered at the time and who the owner is and those kinds of things.
So that information is pulled from your system and put into another system that the law enforcement accesses? And what is the name of that system?
That system's called MnJUS.
MnJUS? How timely is that data?
Minnesota Justice Information System.
Okay. Who administers that?
The BCA.
How timely is that information? How often is it updated and so on and so forth?
Mr. Chair, it's updated on a nightly basis.
Every evening? Okay.
Yes.
Is insurance information provided in that? Are we able to access insurance, whether someone's insured or not, for instance, as part of that discussion?
Mr. Chair, that information isn't on our system. The only information that would be on our system about insurance would be if you had some violations about insurance. We require any person, when they're registering a vehicle, to attest to the fact that they have insurance, and by their signature, and it lists the statute that requires them to be to keep us updated on that.
Okay, so we make the assumption, unless there is a traffic stop and they can't provide proof of insurance, then that data goes back through MnJUS back to MnLARS then?
Mr. Chair, that would be a citation that might come from law enforcement. Mm-hmm. All of those citations come to are on the driver's side of our of driver services, part of our division, that they handle all the records that would be involved. But if it involves a vehicle revocation, which it could,
because all drivers are allowed 10 days to provide insurance information.
Okay.
Then that information would be on the vehicle record if the vehicle registration is revoked, and the conviction would be on the driver's part of the record. Their record is not. The record isn't set up the same way that our record is set up, but they have the same elements in the on their record.
Okay, I think I follow the flow of work there. I think that's instructional for the committee. As we're designing the Minlar system, I think I might have asked you this before, but refresh my memory. I've been having trouble with it lately. MADA, I know they have some ideas on how to speed up title applications, title transfers, license plate issuance, and so on and so forth. And I know the deputy registrars do as well. How actively are they being recruited, the information and help being solicited? How tightly involved are they in the process of putting together the Minlar system?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when we were doing our as-is to-be documents during the pre-design phase, we had dealer participation focus groups as well as deputy registrar focus groups, and we are, during this month, we are having, we are inviting some representatives. We have a group we meet with of deputies on a bi-monthly basis, and we'll be bringing them in to go through some potential business process changes that are under consideration to get their feedback. We've also been doing those with our own staff during this month as well. And we also will be meeting then with the representatives from the two dealer associations that we always talk with whenever we're introducing legislation and get their feedback and that kind of thing. So they'll be coming in later this month. And we often meet with the associations a few times a year to discuss various issues that are concerns of ours and always touch base on any legislative initiatives on either of our parts.
So. Thank you for doing that. I'm getting some, not from the folks that walk these halls carrying their business, but from the folks in the field that actually buy and sell cars and move titles and so on, that a little frustration is being expressed that they think they have a lot more to contribute than is being accepted because these people do it for a living. And I think there's some ideas out there on how we can move titles along, particularly an email that I did not bring with me. I had it for the last meeting where we ran long. We're about to do that again. Three titles, the oldest one is in July of last summer, and we still don't have resolution on what's going on with it. Do we have hope that the title situation is getting better next door, or how are we doing with that?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have, as I think I mentioned at the very end of the meeting when we were trying to wrap up,
yeah,
we have given our staff new talking points, and I'm going to make those available to all legislative offices so that you all have the same talking points. We've also spent time with our phone staff and went through the talking points. In addition to that, we're going to have on our website and also on our interactive voice response the date that we're working on for the title applications were brought into our offices so that they have customers can get that information without waiting, you know, on the phones if they want that right away, and it'll be easy to find on our website. We've just updated our website to try to make it more user-friendly. So we're hoping that will help, and I will provide you with that information. We also believe that it's important that customers understand they don't have to have a title unless they are trying to sell the vehicle or refinance it, and so I think we're trying to make sure that they understand that, and also that they know up front they can get expedited service if they have to and not wait. As I said to you before, and I could wave a wand and make the title turnaround change. We are doing what we can to try to look at different ways for us to do our business. We have a production specialist that we have on staff right now to try to assist us. We are also working at trying to speed up our hiring process, as well as looking at new ways to train our staff so that, because new staff, it's a very timely process to try to, for them to understand how it works and to ensure that the correct taxes are being collected so that we don't have errors, and then that really can delay the process. So we are working on all those things and trying very hard to get the decrease the title turnaround time, but we're not going to get down to 14 days until we have a new system.
Okay. Which brings me to my last question, but perhaps I'll ask that offline. I've got some concerns about how the RFP is going, how vendor negotiations are going, but we're at the end of our committee time. Are there any other questions or comments for committee members? One last thing I'm just compelled to say, and thank you. I will take up the RFP discussion offline, and or perhaps if the committee wishes, we can have it come back again for an update later in the spring. Thank you very much, Ms. McCormick, Ms. Ellison, for your service and for your testimony today.
Thank you.
We heard that during the testimony about the what we call the dim doll amendment, Department of Public Safety and MnDOT passed out the Toward Zero Deaths card. Members, this is actually a fantastic program. And I wanted to be sure that in my closing comments on supporting the amendment of the Demmer Amendment that I applaud the zero deaths. I don't think that our passing the Dim Doll Amendment has any effect on this, because the ability to write tickets and enforce traffic law is not impeded in the least. The only thing is my concern about the crushing burden we're placing on people who are struggling to buy insurance anyhow, and should they be written up, what that does to their driving record. I'm in favor of cutting people a little slack there. But I want you to know that this chairman, and I'm sure everyone in this committee, applauds the way zero deaths is going. Who'd ever thought we'd have seen it approaching 350 a year, which is still 350 too many, but compared to where it was just 10 years ago, this is remarkable improvement, and we want to be sure we continue in that direction. Members, let's see, on February 13th, which I believe is next Monday, we'll be the room above us here, room 5. We'll be talking about the contract claim settlement process that MnDOT has, and the chairman has a small file, House Team 1971. Remind me what that was again? Continuations of appropriations have already been authorized. We'll have a discussion about that and see if that's a bill that the committee would like to move to the floor as well. Further comments for the good of the cause? With that, members, I'll declare us adjourned. Thank you for your good work today.